coming for you.
Is it frustrating to train like you did and then have this in 7 or 8 seconds?
For this fight. I only trained probably 2 weeks or 3 weeks for this fight. I had to bury my best friend, and I dedicated this fight. I wasn't going to fight. I dedicated this fight to him. I was going to rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lynch is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm from Nairclaw. There's no one that can match me. My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable. And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat your children. Praise be to Allah.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Ringside Fracas. I'm your host Naeem for today. And today I'm joined by my lovely guests, Jide and Samson. Jide, how are you, bro?
I'm fine, thank you. Hey, that was an absolute accident. I don't know what it is. My phone just malfunctioned, but I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm good, bro. Thank you. Samson, how are you today?
Yeah, I'm sweet, man. Not bad at all.
So we're going to start off with something I'm enjoying. Samson, you're king. He liked one of my tweets, Leonard Ellerby. If you're watching, Leonard, give us that, you know, PBC plug. We want to be ringside
PBC for the Europe, man. We can get it popping, no problem.
Yeah. I'll run PBC agendas if it means we get a bag.
We can be the media team. We can get up in the commentary. That like, we don't mind. It's fine.
Jide, are you going to run the agendas?
Hey, listen, if we're getting paid, hey, listen, that's the best thing since sliced bread. Are you mad? But yeah, if Leonard's ready to drop the check, listen, I'll run that agenda all day. I'm here to get paid, baby. So,
and Michael can really truly confess his love for Spence.
Fam, I can be bought. I can be bought. I'll tell you that for free.
Money will end the cold war between Jide and Samson. I mean, this week was a great week as a return of British boxing, and we've got a lot of fights this month coming up. You know. Pretty happy. We didn't have boxing for a month. It was a bit dry in the UK, so we have a lot to go through this week, don't we? So let's start off with the big British fight, the domestic fight, the middleweight bout between Chris Eubank Jr. and Liam Williams. Chris Eubank won a UD after getting 3 knockdowns over Liam Williams. How did you guys rate that fight? It was four. Thank you, Samson. Four knockdowns over Liam Williams. He couldn't finish him, the bum. So I'm going to come to you first, Samson. What was your thoughts about the fight and Eubank's performance?
I ain't going to lie, yeah. I go through this up and down thing with Eubank where I declare him the best thing since sliced bread, and I turn around and say, yeah, he's dead. He's finished. But right now, we're back on the top of the peak right now. Buying up all the stocks available. Chris Eubank for the world. Come on, GGG. We'll smash him up. Send that old man to retirement. Like, it was easy and that's work for Eubank yesterday. Easy and that's work. I know people are trying to slate him about his second half of the performance, but personally, I saw what was going on there. This was a complete embarrassment job. It made Williams look like a bum he is. And if I was Eubank, personally, I'd have trolled more, because what people are forgetting is that Williams literally talked and tweeted his way into this fight. He didn't deserve to ever be in the ring with him, but he tweeted his way into a fight by trolling him, and he got dropped on three jabs. Yeah, it was three jabs. And after claiming he ain't got no power and so forth. And you literally got scored and embarrassed. It was bad because I really want to see what the punch stats were and how many actual punches were landed for Williams, because the way he was catching air, honestly, it was nuts. He was swinging and missing. Eubanks looks $1 million. Roy Jones Jr. like it was, you know, like you go to Apple, yeah, you go to App Store. You can buy the full Apple, you can get the version that's light. That was what happened when we saw that last night. We got Roy Jones Jr. Eubank light last night, and I loved it. Like, okay, the second half fundamentals was a bit sloppy and so forth, but mate, I'm buying all weapons and Chris Eubank again. Bring on GGG.
That's a bit of a big statement, but fair enough. Jide, how did you find the performance last night, and what do you think about Eubank Jr. as a whole?
Eubank Jr., he done what he's wanted to do. He basically had his way in the first six rounds. Like Samson said, it was Roy Jones Jr. light. He's my favorite fighter ever. So seeing that fight, I was just flashbacks, man. Flashbacks to the good old days. But obviously, he's not Roy Jones. He's not as good. But this is me addressing Leroy. I wish he was Dr. Lee was on this pod right now. He likes to flap out the gums, saying that Roy Jones doesn't have no technical ability. This is where he needs to stop it. What Roy is trying to teach Chris Eubank to do is disguise his punches, is hide his shots. The reason why Eubank was able to drop my man four times, to be fair, for me, I count three. The fourth one, one of them was like more of a push than an actual knockdown, but it still went down.
It was really short first and went down.
Yeah, yeah. But still, the reason why it was able to knock this guy down with the jab was because it wasn't a televised jab. It was a counter jab. He disguised it, he hid it, and he threw it just as Williams was coming forward. Again, Roy, he's not Roy, but if Dr. Lee goes back and actually watch Roy Jones Jr. fight, he will see that this guy was the reason why David Haye came to exist, even Manny Pacquiao to an extent, and a lot of ambush quote-unquote fighters was based off Roy staying on the outside, wide stance, like just teasing the opponent, drawing them in. The technical ability, the fact that you have to put your feet a certain way, you have to be able to judge distance a certain way, you have to have an understanding of boxing to as an such a high level where you don't have your jab to be in the pocket to try measure your opponent and see, okay, this is he's at this distance, then I can jump in and throw a hook. Or he's not doing that with you. He's looking at you. He's got his construct in front of you. His hands are down. His left hand is swinging down. That is like a pendulum. It's luring you in. And as soon as you try and jump in or do something stupid, a counter's coming. And that's how Chris Eubank was doing. And that's what Roy used to do. The difference between Roy and Chris is Roy will throw hooks, will throw a combination and just knock your lights out. Roy didn't hit harder than the likes of Iron Barkley. He didn't hit harder than a lot of these guys. But he had more stoppages than them because he disguised his punches and lured you in and knocked you out. So Dr. Lee, put some respect on my goat's name. But anyway,
can I add to that though? Yeah, much as I agree with what Chris Eubank was doing, there was a massive element of Williams literally running headfirst as well.
Oh yeah, of course. I'm not here to try to say Williams is some fucking prime GGG pressure fighting supremo. No, I'm not. That's not what I'm trying to say. I'm just trying to say that. Based on what we see, we can clearly see what Roy is doing for Chris. Remember, one of the major criticisms of Chris Eubank was he couldn't jab. He didn't have a jab. He's just a hooker and an uppercut merchant. But the fact that you can knock someone down 3 to 4 times on your jab, on a counter jab, even said it in this post-fight interview that he just wanted to show, again, I don't believe him fully, but he said he just wanted to show the people he can jab and he can do different things, which is why he didn't stop Williams, but yeah, whatever. But it just shows that if you know how to disguise your punches and he's been learning certain technical and certain tactical intricacies in this game, and it's making him that he's definitely above domestic level. No one can say Eubank is domestic level. He beat Williams better than a world champion. So we have
that bub.
Your boy Andre. So we have to give Chris his dues, man. We have to give him his dues. I give him his dues.
The thing that I sort of don't agree with what he was saying was I wanted to punish him and make him look bad. I think that he did make him look bad and he did punish him, especially in the first 6 rounds. I think he probably did want to get the finish, but in round 12 and everything, he realized, especially with the style, and we've seen from Chris, that he does have a bit of stamina issues in the sense that he can put output, especially in the first few rounds, but going on to the later rounds, his output decreases by a big margin. And here in that Roy Jones style, he's using his feet often more. So, and he's not used to that style of moving around more. So I think we saw a bit of that element where he had to lower his output so he could actually move around more and box the way he was boxing. Up until round 12. And then in round 12, he decided I can just make him look like a clown and just decision him because now there's nothing going to happen because I've completely won the fight.
I would say the danger with this style is the age. This style is a youthful style. So it relies on athleticism. And yes, you're right. As he's 32, he can't do this for 2-3 years max.
It's probably last year. It's probably his last year of like physical prime. They say your physical prime comes between around like 27 to 33. So this is sort of his like last year of him being able to be that athletic. Because in his prime, he's probably the most athletic guy in the division.
I think he keeps himself though. He'll definitely outlast for a lot longer than that. Like he's
really he might last longer than, but your body's your body. It will still won't be able to, there'll be the aerobic output, there'll be a lot of different things like injuries in sparring and things that will make it harder for him to be able to implement that style to its highest degree. Like, I wish, I really, really wish Roy Jones got his hands on him when Chris was 24. Like, bro, imagine he had him at that time when he was actually in his youthful prime. He's 24. He built him up till he was 28. I'm not edged to say it will be the greatest thing since sliced bread, but the middleweight division has been lacking. And it's been lacking in terms of talent. It's been lacking in terms of personality.
Nah, I think talent has definitely been like jammed.
I struggle to rate these guys.
And right now, it's lacking. Yeah,
it's not just Charlo and the guys I have an agenda against. It's all these guys. It's all these guys. The only two guys that were good and they fought, well done. But instead of giving way to the new era to fight each other, the likes of GGG giving Andre, giving Charlo, giving all these guys an opportunity, he's not doing that. He's rather cooped up, praying for a third fight. Canelo's doing Canelo thing. I can't criticize that guy anymore. And you just have the rest of these guys don't want to fight each other. It's just, so if Chris Eubank wasn't like hidden and wasn't doing bullshit like he was doing and was actually a live name in that division, that's another name we could have thrown in the mix. Again, I'm not saying he would have fought these guys because, again, this division is just fucking weird. But if he could, if he did, that it would look good. Do you know what I mean? It'd be a good look for the division. But, yo.
The one thing I'll say with Eubank is I know one of his fans is pissed about him because he said he could have finished the fight, but he didn't. Have you not seen that DM that he got from his fan where he said, before the fight, I bet my house was it or life savings on you. Yeah, it's Scott Williams. And then imagine being that fan, seeing Eubank in the post-fight interview. I could have stopped him, but I didn't.
You bet your life savings. Listen, he should have given me his money. I'd have put all his peas on Ethereum or some bullshit like that. I'd have gone casino and slapped all the peas on red. Like, who bets their whole life savings on a boxing fight?
Yeah, you got to run that DM back. Like, okay, bro, since you could have stopped him, you chose not to run that back.
Rob me my peas.
What do you guys think's next for Eubank Jr.? If we're being realistic, what fight do you think is next for him?
He's got to chase the WBO route, I believe, isn't it?
WBA, I think.
Yeah, he's good on that route. Like, he claims he wants world titles. Even personally, I don't think he necessarily really cares. I think Eubank's in that position where I like to call it the matchroom belt. Yeah, where you can just fight commercial fights. Essentially,
and he's still taking shots.
I love that. My point being, like, rather than chasing the belts, which don't necessarily make the biggest money, you can fight a lot of domestic or commercial fights and make big buck and do good pay per view numbers. Really and truly. In my opinion, Billy Joe Saunders is a fantastic matchup right now.
Yeah.
Like, that does great numbers. It drives good, great interest. They both can sell the fight. They're both, you know, they've got rivalry, they've got history already. It's sick. I'm basically promoting the fight right now. Do you know what I mean? Like, the idea of that fight being made is sick. And I prefer that to probably any fight, unless you're going to go get GGG. But even then, everyone's going to say he's an old man anyway. You're going to get no credit.
No, but he's not going to win the fight.
He's not going to get the fight, but if he gets...
He's not going to win it.
Of course he will.
Triple G with one hand can...
Wait. No, he won't. The Triple G that struggled with Devrenchenko?
Yeah.
Nah, mate. I promise you, the 40-year-old GGG is food, which is why he's not trying to fight these guys.
Who's Eubank Jr. beat that's worth of
It doesn't matter who he's beat. I'm just looking at attributes.
No one.
Right now,
his attributes. Right now, GGG is food.
He keeps shouting about Canelo, but we all know if he gets Canelo, he's getting destroyed. He's getting near enough.
When was the last time GGG looked good? You're saying who is XYZ?
Yeah, Canelo, that's it. Canelo,
when was that?
Is it Canelo?
His career recently has been long because he hasn't been doing much.
So it looked good in the first Canelo fight, which was
the second Canelo fight.
He did look good in the second fight.
Second Canelo fight, he did look good, but Canelo won that for me.
Okay, it was a close fight, but he looked good. You can't say he didn't look good.
He looked good, but that's like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Fine.
Canelo. That's what I'm saying. Even in the decline, he's still better than Eubank Jr.
Based on what? He struggled against Devrenchenko.
If that fight gets made, we'll see.
We know GGG is not going to take it. That's not what his team wants to do.
I think Eubank himself will use his pen to
mess. No, Eubank not going
to
take him.
Sorry. No, it's not about Eubank not wanting to take it. Like, I will bet my house, like that guy that bet on Eubank, that if the fight gets offered to Triple G, they won't take it.
Yeah, I hear that.
Now,
if the Eubank fight gets off,
yeah, because now they won't take it because he's going to go for a unification fight. So why would he take Eubank?
Okay, if he wins the unification, and that fight comes up, you won't take it unless he's forced to.
If I'm Triple G, I'll be spiteful. I'll be no, because when we were meant to fight in 2016, no, but when they were meant to fight in 2016, he said no.
I agree.
He doesn't, but I'm saying I'll be spiteful. I'm a prick.
I hear that, but I'm telling you. Not listen, Father Time's undefeated. I don't care how good you are or you were. You're an old man. You're 40 years old. And Triple G was never his style was never based on athleticism. However, his style required him to have a good endurance, resistance. Good chin, good punch resistance, good all that sweet stuff. That declines with age. I don't care how good you think you are, which is why Dvurchenko was hurting him. So now you're gonna fight a young athletic guy. He's not as good as you technically. We all know that. But he's got an engine. He'll throw hella punches and he will not stand in front of you. And now you have to stop that guy. Triple G has to stop him to win. And And as Chris looked like he's been seriously hurt in a fight.
No. Chris Eubank's chin.
Which is why,
underrated. It's crazy.
Yeah, no, his chin's got a good chin.
I hear you, Naheem. I fully hear you, and I'm getting you why you're dismissing him. But we literally just spoke before we went on air about Rodriguez. Like, these guys that have youth, boxing's a young man's sport. I don't care because we've seen Floyd and Bernard, and we're thinking, no, it's a young man's sport. And GGG's trying to cash out, which is why he wants the Canelo fight. I don't even think he cares about winning that fight. He's just trying to get.
Yeah. He's just looking for that thing, isn't
it?
It's just,
yeah. And I hear it. Fuck it. So, Chris Eubank Jr. right now is the wrong fight for him. Who I do think is a wrong fight for Chris Eubank Jr. is Andrade. Because this new style he's trying to do and be on the outside. And you don't want to do that against a guy who's longer than you, he's a better technical boxer than you, and he's a southpaw. It's all wrong for Eubank, and Eubank would have to actually attack him, and we know he can't do that. So an Andrade fight's an L for him. But Charlo, I feel like he's got a chance against him. I feel like he's got a chance against Morata. I feel like he's got a chance Munguia. I feel like he's got a chance against all these guys. I'm not saying he wins.
Yeah.
I feel like he's got a chance.
That's fair. That's a fair assessment. Perfectly fine. With Eubank, I just hope he gets, because there's a lot of talk, either obviously the Saunders rematch, or a lot of people want him to fight, you know, Felix Cash, the British. Cash.
Yeah. I want to see that, man.
I want to see Cash against Williams, because I want to see how Felix Cash still matches up against those type of opponents. Obviously, level him up and see where he gets, how he looks. But we'll see what they do with him. And box, obviously, that's Eubank's their staple fighter, so we'll see what fight they can secure him, because they really need him to look good and also be winning fights. But let's move across to the other side of the pond and go to PBC land. So Sam, this is your territory. Let's talk about the big welterweight comeback fight for Keith Thurman. He won a UD decision over Mario
Thurman.
won almost every single round. He looked good even after coming back from a 2.5 year layoff. So I'm going to come to you, Sam, first. What do you think about it?
Personally, didn't really particularly care. I don't think he deserves credit for it. He dropped off quite heavily as well, which was expected. I actually had the prediction as a split decision purely because of the layoff and, you know, him fighting once in like 4 years or something like that. So he did look good in the first half of the fight. You can see the output just dropped off and he got tired and Barry started coming back into the fight. If you want to be honest, where Thurman goes is a bit, I don't know, because he's not beating the Jaron Ennis's, or that he's not even acknowledging exists, and he's not beating Spence or Crawford. So he's a bit of a no man's land right now to me personally.
I sort of agree with that. I think his next move is more, let's see what happens with Spence Ugas so I can get that Spence fight, because I don't think he would fight someone like Crawford, because yeah, Spence and Crawford are sort of similar risk in terms of they're both brilliant fighters, but Spence is the more money fighter. Like, that's the fight that will bring him more money. I don't think he's in that position where he's trying to get back to another world title. I think for him, it's just, let's give this another go and see how much money I can make for it, because he's taken too many years off. And yeah, he looked good against Mario Barrios, but that's against a 140 pounder.
It did not look good, bro.
Decent. For a 2.5 year comeback, he looked decent. And compared to the top 147s, even the top five, you know, the Jaron Ennis's, the Virgil Ortiz's, he's going to struggle. I feel like he's going to struggle against them. And I think that's his strategy. I think he's going to go for one big fight and he's probably ended after that. Jide, what do you think about the whole performance and what Thurman's next move could be?
I'll tell you now, I'm not going to be here to cap. I didn't watch the fight because it's a bullshit fight. Caught the highlights. But what I will say is Thurman should have stopped him. The only way you could have justified this fight is stopping Barrios, because Barrios shouldn't have been in there with him. They were never in the same league, but he didn't. He coasted to a UD. And I don't care if it's your first fight back after 2 years. I don't rate you. I don't rate it. And what makes me sick is before the fight, I was talking, oh, I want to fight Spence. I want to fight Crawford. I want all the big fish. Moments after the fight is that Crawford's got issues with his promoter. He's basically dismissing that fight. He's not going to fight Crawford. So he's just here to just get his name back in the mix and try and get himself a big fight and cash out again. I feel like the Pacquiao money is running low. So he's probably looking for another big fight to cash out on. Because honestly, the guy is just a waste of space for me. Like, he's been the biggest disappointment in terms of welterweight in a very long time. And I'm including Eyepatch, who's not fighting the guy I want him to fight.
Oh my God.
Thurman has been a bigger disappointment, because that guy, when he was coming up one time, he was saying Floyd was ducking him, which I agreed, because he was a WBA mandatory and Floyd didn't want to fight him for whatever reason. Went and fought Berto instead. But anyway, he did that. And then when he became champion and Spence wanted to fight him, he tried to freeze out Spence. Like, bro, what are you on? And then you had your opportunity to fight an aging Pacquiao who's not fought in 2 years before he fought you. And you went and put that performance in. Like, and then after that, you basically semi-retired from boxing. So Thurman's lost all his juice, man. Everything that made him what he was coming up, he's lost it. So yeah, I'm not impressed that he went UD with Barrios, because who's Barrios? I just want to see what he's going to do next now, because obviously he's dismissed the Crawford fight. He's not going to get the Spence fight, like, no way at all. So I just want to know what's going to happen with him.
I mean, yeah, that's perfect. That's a perfect assessment, I'd say. The thing I'd say with Thurman is he's probably just coming back because he needs surgery on his hairline, because that shit.
All the years of his head getting pulled back in that ponytail has done him.
I saw that way in photo and I'm thinking, this guy's head is gone. But yeah, I mean, with Barrios, I feel like the last two fights for him was just like, especially at 140, he's not going to make that type of money. Take these fights, is what it is. Do your best and just get the money and get out in it. It's like, he was never going to make that type of money. Wherever money he did make, we'll see what the pay-per-view numbers are, if PBC decide to release it or not. I was actually surprised it was on PBC, that type of fight. Leo Santa Cruz also came back to a decision against Carl Bajal. Him again, another 3 years off as well. So like
these PBC guys, yeah. I just don't understand. Like, I don't get, they don't care about their careers. Obviously in boxing, no one's there to be, I feel like boxing's always been a situation where money first, I'm here to eat, I don't care about my legacy comes second, which is fine. Like, at the end of the day, you're getting punched in the face, so I can't come and tell you what you want to do or what you shouldn't and shouldn't be doing with your career. However, boxing's a short career. Like, you're supposed to make as much money as possible while you physically can. So these guys taking 3 years, 2 years off, you're essentially shortening your earning window. You're shortening your... It's like us lot that we have the opportunity to work for basically depending on what any one of us does or whatever, and then we're making X amount a year, and then we decide, oh, fuck it, we're going to take 3 years off. We've got kids, we've got family, we've got all that, we're going to take 3 years off. And then try go back in the working population and go straight back in where you were. No, it's 3 years is God. Things have changed. New players have entered. Someone else is doing your role probably better than you. Like, the guys that I'm seeing leaving uni, when I left uni, they have way more skills than me in terms of, like, what they could do with their coding, with, do you know what I mean? Like, they could right. do so much more. So if I try to leave the workplace 3 years, for 3 years or 2 years, and come back and say, oh, I want the same job as him, then my employer is going to look at me and be like, really, bro? You better get the hair. Move, get out of here. So these guys like Santa Cruz, Thurman, I don't understand the thinking of taking these long layoffs. I do understand that apparently PBC, they don't have as many dates they used to. They're running out of money, maybe. All these rumors floating around. If that's the case, go to Heyman. Yo, Heyman, I know you can't get me these dates, but go work with a top rank, a Matchroom. I don't care. I'm the fighter. You're my advisor. You don't own me. Do you get what I mean? Get me out there more somehow. If it's not on your platform, get me out there. And I just don't get why these guys don't push. But
Thurman got married and had a kid. He don't really care about working like that.
Yeah, he's
that's why. Yeah. He's trying to catch that. It's as simple as that.
With the thing I don't like about Santa Cruz, I think he's still the champion, even though he didn't defend it in this fight. But he's still holding the belt since 2017.
How does he get away with this? I don't understand.
WBA, he's Hispanic.
Same thing with Gary Russell in that same division when he had the belt for how long and he didn't defend it in like 2 years. It's a shambles. So, and the regular champions, obviously, Lee Wood, he's fighting Conlon soon. I don't know if they're going to upgrade him soon or not.
They need to just upgrade it.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to upgrade him or force him to fight Santa Cruz after. I don't know, but they haven't made a clear decision yet as to what. So that's a bit messed up. And the fact that he's back, I think they're just going to let him be the champion now because he's come back now. So it's very weird, that whole division and how they dealt with the belts. Now moving on to the other side of the promotion at UFC. Yes, there was a big super flyweight fight happening on the DAZN show. Jesse Rodriguez winning a brilliant UD decision over Carlos Quadras. Did any of you guys catch that fight?
No, I didn't.
I didn't watch it live, but I watched it in the morning.
Yeah, what do you think of it, Jidai?
Yeah, I was thoroughly impressed. Rodriguez, I did not expect him to go move up and do that. I expected it to be a competitive fight. Again, he was going in there as favorite, but with these small guys, maybe it is easier for them to move up and down in weights because it's only like 2 pounds or 3 pounds between them. So it's
nothing.
Yeah, it's literally nothing. But he's so young. He's the youngest reigning champion right now. So I feel like it was maybe be too inexperienced. But I remember I was saying to Naeem, like, Pacquiao, this is how Pacquiao got his break as well. It was a late replacement. I forgot who he fought, but it was in a lower weights, like maybe flyweight or bantamweight. I forgot who he fought, but it was a late replacement and went and just destroyed the guy. Just destroyed him. And everyone's like, wow, who's this guy? And that's how the legend began for Manny Pacquiao. So I feel like Rodriguez is someone to look out for. In my opinion, I feel like he should go back down and do some more work in his natural division before campaigning here. But at the end of the day, as we said, boxing is about money. And all the big money fights are in this current division. The current division is just one that's fighting. So if I'm his advisor, I'll tell him to stay. But if I'm him and I want to prolong my career and have like do all that legacy bullshit, I'll probably go back down. But yeah.
Yeah, I was thoroughly impressed by him because before this fight, I did watch one of his fights on DAZN and I was thinking he's a quality fighter. You could tell that he's 22, so he's pretty young. And there was a big future for him. And he recently signed his DAZN Matchroom deal. So the fact that he'd signed it and then 2 days later, you know, Romy Fusai pulled out with COVID. So on a week's notice, he took this, you know, title fight going two divisions up, even though it is a few pounds, still going up two divisions and fighting a title fight on 1 week's notice is a pretty big thing. you know, considering that, you know, a lot of people want, you know, the full 12-week camp or 8-week camp, and he only took it on 1 week. He was in training, but wasn't training for Carlos. And the fact that he went in there, you know, got a knockdown in the second, I think the second or third round, you know, brilliant uppercut. He looked very good. The problem I have in that fight was he did look like the smaller man. It was like you could tell the difference. Carlos had the punch power. He looked bigger. There were some punches Jesse was taking where I was thinking, these aren't the punches that you want to have, especially so early on in your career. But the fact that he was able to, you know, take most of the rounds and win the belt is amazing. And that's how, like Jide said, that's how you get your name out there, is get the belt, that's how you become a great. Do things like this. Take on 1 week's notice and win the title in a division that you've never been in. But I agree with a lot of boxing purists where they say he should go back down again and continue his career there, because there's a double edge where he can stay in this division, get the big money fights against the Chocolatitos, the Estradas, the Rungvisais, but he will be the smaller guy and he will take, it will be a harder fight than Carlos Cuadras. But if he goes down, he can easily build his career, and then when he's older and he's developed more, he can go up to those weights and win those fights. But he's a brilliant boxer. So if anyone hasn't watched that, I'd suggest you go watch that and watch Jesse Rodriguez's career and follow it, because he's one to watch out for. Guys like Shakur Stevenson, people rave about him. So I'd suggest you watch that. So let's move on to what happened in the UK recently. We didn't get to talk about this. I think it happened like a week ago or something, but which is the Fury White $41 million bid from Queensbury in Top Rank. Want to get your guys' views on what's happening with that fight and how you think about what you think about the bid, what you think about the who won it, so what are your thoughts on the whole thing in general, the whole situation. So I'm going to come to you first, Jide.
So excuse me.
Bless you.
Yeah. So I think the Matchroom, the 41 million bid thing, has been overstated. It's like the Fury fanboys and the anti-Matchroom lot. It's like they wanted Eddie and Matchroom to be visibly upset and angry that they lost the purse bid. And it's like, obviously, I believe the WBC and Top Rank colluded. Boxing is a corrupt sport. No. I'm being dead serious. I do believe they colluded.
This is what we've got to now.
No, it's not about this is where we've got to. Like, there's clearly animosity between the WBC and Dillian White. And they've never done this before. They agreed to a purse lower than their mandatory split because Top Rank asked for it. They've never done this before. So, like, it's not about this is where we got to. This we're seeing history live. So that 80-20 bullshit, like, that is because Dillian, they don't like Dillian. A lot of the boxing establishment don't like Matchroom, don't like Eddie Hearn. It's just what it is. You can't pretend that doesn't exist. So I do feel...
Can I give my rebuttal, though?
When you can just keep it in the back of your head, and then you can when it's your turn. But yeah, so the WBC, I feel like, definitely didn't do Dillian and Eddie any favors. But however, what Eddie said, that why would he try and overpay for a promotion where he's giving Fury 80% of the money? That makes perfect sense. Like, why would you, if it's just as a businessman, why would you do that? Yeah, having the show would be great, but you're paying this guy 80% to come and potentially flog your guy on your show, and you're going to pay him, or you're going to overpay, so you're going to lose money at the end of the day. So that's giving your business an L. So I actually don't think Eddie's that rattled that they lost the bid. What I find funny is people saying, oh, Dillian's quiet and he hasn't signed a contract. No, both of them haven't signed any contract. None of them had any contracts. So now that they've paid the 10%, which came out after, funny enough, after Eddie's interview, the WBC confirmed that they got their deposit. So now they're sending out contracts. Now, if Dillian doesn't sign a contract, then I'll be fully with everyone and putting pressure on him and saying, yo, what are you doing? Because Dillian White has to take this fight. I'm here. I'm fighting your corner. You are being bumped because they're saying now Wembley's looked at as front runners for the fight. This is the fight that these guys were saying, you're not worth 5 million for the fight. But now they're talking about Wembley. because it's a huge fight. You're a huge name. You built your name. You're the third biggest selling guy in the country behind Fury and Joshua. When Fury ran off to America to do his American stuff, it was you, Joshua, and Chisora literally pushing the sport forward for the heavyweights in our country. So you have a lot of personal value in this fight, and you're being bumped. But regardless, if the arbitration comes back and it doesn't go in your favor, you have to take this fight. You have to go into a hostile territory and try and get that belt back. Not even get it back, the belt you've never had, get it in blood. You have to flog Fury. So if he comes back and says, oh, I don't feel like it's fair, so I'm pulling out, then all the critics, I take back every single thing I've ever said in defense of Dillian Whyte. Because, again, I criticized him for not taking the AJ opportunity, but I understood what he was trying to do. But understanding what you're trying to do now is out of the window. You finally got your shot. Take it. It doesn't matter what happened. It doesn't matter if there was money under the table and the numbers have been inflated, so they made sure they win the bid. None of that matters. What matters now is you have to sign for this fight. And if he doesn't sign for this fight, the way I got into Canelo, that's what I always tell people. I'm very consistent. When I decide to turn on someone, it's because they've done something that I feel like is fucking bullshit. The same way I turned on Spence. Initially I was against Canelo. I've turned on Midget Tank, the pea shooter. Like, I will turn on AJ. AJ's done nothing for me to turn on him.
But you're gonna turn on Brook in a few weeks' time.
Brook has done nothing for me to turn on him.
After Saturday, yeah. After Saturday.
When he knocks out Khan.
When he gets knocked out.
Yeah, that's my take on it. Like, Dillian Whyte has to ignore him. He has to use the bullshit that's happening as fuel, and he has to go and he has to stop Fury. He's not going to win a decision. He has to go and stop him. So, good luck to him. Again, I don't feel like Fury is some iron-jawed guy. He's not. It can be stopped, but can Dillian be the guy that does it? We need to see. He needs to sign that contract, and that fight has to happen in April.
Samson, your rebuttal?
Yeah, it's quite simple. Like, as much as we talk about Dillian Whyte not picking, not basically feeling hard done by and so forth, yeah, this is boxing, it's prize fighting. You take the money on the table, you win the belt, and now you're the A-side. Same way Mayweather bought himself out of the contract, same way Crawford's eventually now left top rank. We all know that some things, there's a lot of politics with boxing, not everything falls in the rolls of dice the way you want it to roll. So, really, all the noise that Whyte has been doing about 1,000 days and so forth, he should absolutely be jumping his opinion. All this, I'm going to call, say it in the ring. You know, you don't like Fury like he claimed. You claim you don't care about money. Johnny Nelson always comes out saying, yeah, Dillian Whyte will fight through for free. Well, mate, they've offered you more, a career high payday, and you're still trying to scratch the pennies for more coins. You're taking a piss. Like, we want the fight. Like, the public wants the fight. The public's clamoring for the fight. And it's a good domestic fight. So, and you claim that you've been dying for this opportunity, or was you only dying for it when it was Deontay Wilder? You're not so on it no more. Because now I'm actually starting to wonder what's going on. Do you feel like you'd rather swerve it? Because it's getting weird. Like, I don't understand why. Yeah. You know what's really making me nervous? Before the purse bids, and once they went to purse bids, yeah, and announced it was going to go to purse bids, and since then, we have not heard a single word from Dillian Whyte. All these interviews every other week talk about when he's shot and what his opportunity. They've all gone away. They're completely dead in the water. And that makes me think, like, maybe you didn't think that was going to happen and you was going to go and explore your options and just keep, you know, banging that drum. And unfortunately, the fight's really down in your lap and now you're just going to basically talk crap about money. But it is literally a career higher payday by a long shot as well. So that's a bit confusing, concerning for me.
I don't think he had options though like that. This is his only option. I feel like he was always gonna try and push for the Fury fight. He wanted the Fury fight for the most money because, like I said, this is his first chance at the big time, and he wanted to get a 10 milli, 12, 30 milli, which again is a prize fighter. This is their job, right? I'm not mad at someone trying to get the most money out of a situation. And I do feel like he's been seriously bumped. So, but it don't matter. Like you said, it doesn't matter if you've been bumped. Mayweather got bumped fighting what's his name, Oscar De La Hoya. But getting bumped against Oscar is different from getting bumped against Fury. Getting bumped against Oscar, you're getting 20 mils. you're getting 10, 15 M's. You're getting big P's. It doesn't matter the split he's giving you. You're getting the huge money. Getting bumped against Fury, yeah. Obviously, it's still a lot of money. Eight million. But Korea, it's not. Okay, but like, I don't want to bring this back up. But when they were given certain bronze bum, his career high payday offers, he was saying no. He's like, no, I'm worth more than that. So we can't get mad at these guys who are always trying to get way more than they feel like they're worth in certain situations. But I will say that he has no options. He has nowhere to go. Otto Wallen fought in the weekend and he looked shit. Like, again, this is one thing that everyone was talking about Otto Wallen like he's some killer because he gave Fury a hard fight. This is why I love heavyweight boxing. I can't wait for when Tyson Fury gets beat. I'm going to troll. Like, I felt like I was going to troll hard with the Wilder stuff, but the Wilder one, it was so pathetic. Like, after he took his L, it was just pathetic. So I trolled, but it was more, I'm sad. Like, if Fury loses, oh my God. Twitter will ban me that day, man. Twitter will 100% ban me that day because the boxing media, Gareth Davis and them, have turned Tyson Fury into the greatest boxer since sliced bread. And anyone who looks good against him, they overhype. Otto Wallen looked disgusting in the weekend. Disgusting. He looked so bad, so trash. And they were talking about this guy because he gave Fury a tough fight. This is what a lot of casuals, and I'm starting to realize a lot of so-called, quote-unquote, hardcore boxers, they don't believe in styles make fights. It's like people don't believe in that mantra. They just believe you are the best. Because you're the best, no one can fuck with you. Which is why when they say stuff like, oh, Wilder will kill Chisora or Wilder will kill Dillian White, it doesn't matter what you think. It really does not matter. Put them in together and let us see it happen. Because we've seen worse. Imagine Buster Douglas Tyson. They say, oh, everyone was saying Tyson was going to kill Douglas. He's going to destroy him. And because of that, they didn't let the fight happen. If Buster Douglas and Mike Tyson were in 2022, that fight would never have happened because all the boxing fans and boxing media would be like, oh, it's a funeral. Never, don't let Buster Douglas fight that guy. Like, styles make fights. And Tyson Fury, stylistically, certain men are bad for him. And we need to see these fights happen. So stop. I hate when they're using all these obscure boxes he pulled out of the thin air. Like, Tyson Fury made this guy's career, you know. Because my man looked good against Tyson Fury. Tyson Fury plucked him out of obscurity and man busted his face up. And they're like, wow, Otto Wallen, this guy might be the second coming of Jesus. But anyway, that's a next tangent. So yeah, like, White has to take this fight. He has no options. If he doesn't take this fight, I'm on him. It's that simple.
Pause. You lot love your sliced bread analogies. You know what? Kings Mill Hovis, hit us up for a sponsorship. Every time we say best thing since sliced bread, we'll just hold it up for product placement. But the one thing I'm just curious about this fight, if it does get obviously signed and made, is if it does Wembley or Millennium Stadium, which were the two venues that were discussed, do you guys think it sells out completely?
Yeah.
Like 80,000?
Yeah. No, I don't think it does like 80, 90,000. But I feel like they can do 60, 70 easy.
So that's the thing. The Millennium one and 70,000 plus.
Yeah, I feel like they should do Millennium. They should either do the MEN, Old Trafford, or the Millennium. They shouldn't do Wembley. Wembley is, to sell out Wembley, it's a lot, man. You just need the stars need to align.
Yeah.
The stars need to align for a Wembley fight. And I feel like a Dillian White Tyson Fury fight, though it's a big fight, I don't feel like it's a stars, it's a lining kind of fight. AJ Fury, they need to create extra capacity in Wembley for that. Like,
they do that in Wembley, to be fair.
Easy. Like, they can do Wembley.
I definitely feel that both fights are like, I think just a big domestic heavyweight fight in the UK. Yeah, that's actually, you know, I'm fighting on world level. I've never seen Fury in the UK for a number of years. And it's actually a good fight, not one-sided in any stretch. Yeah. I definitely believe that fight does the numbers.
Yeah. Oh, it's gonna do
that. I don't think it'll sell in 10 minutes, but I think in a promotion after the fight will be sold out.
Well, I think it's a good. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good determinant. whether or not Fury and White are the stars that we think they are. Because obviously when it comes to like AJ, we don't question it. Oh, can he sell this out? We know it. Like if Usyk AJ is going to happen in Wembley, we know that that's probably going to sell out. So I think this, at the end of it, if this fight does get made and if it gets made in Wembley or the Cardiff Arena, we'll see how big of stars these two really are if they're able to fill out a whole stadium. But yeah, they should do, but we'll see at the end of it, I guess. It's one of those ones. Now, moving on to the other side of the heavyweight division. Usyk's manager was in an interview and they were saying that AJ and his team are trying to push their talks of trying to push the rematch in June so that AJ has more time to develop and have more time with his trainer, basically, gel with his trainer. What do you guys think of that? I'm going to come to you first, Jide, and then you, Samson.
It's obviously the smart thing to do, but I don't feel like no time is going to be enough. That is what AJ and his team needs to realize. Obviously, the later the fight gets delayed, the better it is for them, but one camp isn't enough to beat Usyk via boxing. It's just not enough. So whatever this camp are trying to do and who they're trying to get as a coach, and I've even seen Roy Jones Jr. say he would love to train Anthony Joshua. I don't know what he sees in, but I just feel like he says he would love to train him in how to maybe beat Usyk. And I feel like the only way he can beat Usyk is to disguise his punch, hide his uppercut or straight right hand and unload it. That's the only way he's going to beat Usyk. He's got to catch him off guard when Usyk is coming in with a straight left hand, slip, left hook, or throw a left hook with him. Like, he's not going to beat Usyk by setting something up, as in like a jab and then a right, and it's not going to work. This guy's too slick. So I feel like that is why they want to extend the camp, to work on maybe that one trick, that trick that can catch him. And it's the best thing to do. I still don't feel like 6 months is enough, or 4 months now, or whatever they're trying to do. It's going to be tough, but listen, he's the A side at the end of the day. And if Usyk wants money, he's gonna say yes, like he did in the first fight. They said yes to all the demands. They got the money. So the same thing's going to happen again. Eddie Hearn's going to throw the bag at him. They're going to accept the June. No matter, as long as they fight, I don't really care. But I just don't like the division being like delayed, because now what's going to happen is after White Fury happens and we get a winner, let's say Usyk beats AJ in June, Fury wins, because Fury is fucking dickhead. He's going to say, between April and June, X amount of months has gone by. I want a warm up or some bullshit like that. We'll take a dead fight in the interim. Then now Usyk has to fight all his mandatories because he's got three belts, and then we're gonna end up getting a fight in 2023, which is what I don't want to happen. I want to see an undisputed champion in 2022, and I feel like delaying the fight to June increases the odds of it going to 2023, unless Dylan White pulls the upset, which again, we don't know if that will happen. So,
fair enough. Samson, your thoughts on the potential rematch being in June?
Wait, let me keep it simple as this year. I said it before, and I think when I said it here, I was slightly saying in banter with like a slight element of potential truth to it. I think AJ wants to swerve this fight, and I don't think it's a bad idea at all if he does it, but I think he wants to swerve it. Like, if he swerves it, I totally get it. But the problem is, which is a lot of boxing, that is trying to control the perception and pushing a fight out to June, like you said, what Jid was alluding to, that one fight camp isn't going to solve the issues that you're trying to face in Usyk. Yeah, and you're just not going to get enough time to then incorporate that style. You need to, you know, job and trainer, go for a couple camps and then start incorporating what your trainer's trying to teach you. AJ just hasn't got the time in his hands to do that. And he's been basically looking for a trainer for about a couple of months. And we're now in the new year in February with no trainer announced and no fight announced. I honestly feel like the lifeline of getting Usyk to take that fight, take the Fury fight, was the blessing that he wanted, like, massively. And the fact that he couldn't, that's not gone through, he's probably scrambling a bit. So that's why I think he's been pushed back. And I honestly feel like if they get an angle to this Swerving fight.
My issue has just been, I hate that these heavyweights, especially the big star, I don't like it when they do like one fight a year or like two fights a year, especially Usyk himself. He's also been recently on that trend where he's been fighting like once a year. He has been fighting as regularly as he should be. So both of them, I think that's why we kind of wanted it in April and May, get that regularity going in as well, because you want to be fighting more often. We want to see more of you rather than once a year. And if it happens in June, I mean, it's better in terms of timing, just because for everyone else, like it's in the summer, it's more accessible. People can go out to it and everything. You know, there's more time can be spent on it. But again, for business, I think it makes sense. And their camps, for AJ's camp. But in terms of for fans, especially hardcore ones, we kind of want to see this done already. Like Jide said, we want to move it on so that we can get the bigger fights in the division as well. But yeah. That was brilliant. And we're going to end off, last thing, on the about the ringside golden boy, the fighter that we all love. Ryan Garcia announced to fight Emmanuel Tagbo in his comeback fight in, I think, April. What do you guys think?
Emmanuel Tagbo, I thought it was O'Hara Davis.
No, it was Emmanuel Tagbo.
No, I've not seen the picture of it. It looks like he's twin or something. I was so baffed.
Let me see. I'll look it up.
Davis.
Man, Davis. It's Tagbo.
But you think I'm joking? Go and have a look.
Let me go have a look. But what do you think about that fight, Samson, first?
I don't have a Scooby-Doo who Tagbo is. Yeah, first of all. And secondly, Ryan Garcia is a big ass bum, man. Like, he might
it's be. Not, it's not Tagbo, it's Tago. My bad.
Tagbo. Oh, look at you. Tavo, well, yeah.
No one knows him. You can't blame me.
No one knows him. To be fair, are you done or are you still?
Yeah, that's basically a bum, man. Like,
to be fair, to the social media fighters, what's it called? To give him a small defense, they did try to make the Isaac Cruz fight, and it was the Cruz people who fucked that up, which is why.
Dillahoe turned around and said they didn't sign the contract. They turned and said, we've offered you more money and stop.
Yeah, I can't lie. It's the Cruz people. The Cruz people, basically, what I'm telling you what's going to happen with the Cruz lot, this is just a typical PBC bullshit. They told him, listen, don't fight no fucking Ryan Garcia. Chill. My boy will deal with Romero. Then we can have the rematch, which we feel you deserve. Listen, if that happens, yeah.
Oh, God.
If that happens, you call me a save this little. I hope this little snippet gets saved because I might have to play the lottery. I promise you. I know how the PBC works now. Like we all know how these guys work.
There goes our sponsorship.
but the Cruz people don't want to ruin Isaac Cruz's value because his value went way up against Tank because he put up a good effort. If he gets flatlined by Ryan Garcia, that is gone. It's probably not going to happen, but again, it's a possibility because Garcia can punch. So I won't lie, that fight falling through wasn't the fault of the Garcia side. So now they're fighting Tagbo. And Tagbo, I don't know this guy. Nobody knows this guy. We're just having this Ryan Garcia guy continue to cosplay as a boxer again. And yeah, I don't care about the fight. The fight's going to happen. When it happens, I just want this guy to finally take his mandatory. Can this man take his mandatory? We're waiting for him. Like, the streets are waiting for him to take his mandatory. Like, they've given you two shots. You turned two down. So, what's going to happen? Let's say Devin Haney gets the Kambosos fight. That's another thing. Kambosos moving like an absolute prat. He's just milking this whole situation. But let's say Haney gets the Kambosos fight. Let's say Haney wins all the belts. Are you going to fight him now, Garcia? Or are you going to say, I can't be mandatory for four belts and try to create your own Garcia championship? I don't know. Because this guy, I just don't understand what's going on in that division. But yeah, man, no one really cares about the Garcia Tagbo fight. And I feel sorry for Golden Boy because I guess the guarantee purses for Garcia must be sky high because they lost Canelo. So I'm sure he probably renegotiated that and said, yo, I want XYZ because I'm the main man now. And if you don't want Golden Boy to fail, you better pay me.
And the main guy, one guy.
you get what I mean? And he's not fighting anyone. He's not bringing you no money. You haven't got him on a 360 deal, so all this social media posts, you're not eating off it. It's like, what are you doing with this boy? So, I don't know, man. Ryan Garcia, his career is not serious. I only care about the serious fighters. So, until we fight someone serious, again, like I said before, Cruz falling through wasn't his fault, but he shouldn't just be chasing Cruz. But yeah.
The thing about Golden Boy, I think they still have, you know, Virgil. So I think that's still one of the avenues for them, because Virgil is someone we know that can become a multiple world champion. And in the future, he's going to be a big star. But yeah, with Ryan, what pisses me off is in January, so last January, not this one, he obviously beat Campbell, called out Tank. Who else did he call out? Haney. He went up to Haney's face, stuff like that. And then he won the WBC interim in that fight against Campbell when he won. Brilliant fight, won it, well done. Got the mandatory, and like Jide said, turned it down to fight another WBC mandatory with Fortuna. And then pulled out of that fight because of whatever. And then tried to set another mandatory fight with Jojo Diaz for Devin Haney's, when he could have just fought for the title. So he tried to fight two different mandatories for a mandatory that he already had. And then pulled out of that because he said, oh, my hand are hurting. And then now he's been talking all this shit. Oh, I would like to fight Cambosos. I'd like to fight Teofimo's rubbish. I'd like to fight Haney, stuff like that. And then you go and fight Emmanuel Tago, who no one knows. And even if you go on BoxRec, it says inactive because he hasn't fought since 2020. So, like, again, like you said, he's not serious, but it's one of these ones where it's just annoying when he chats shit and then doesn't do anything about it. And where his career goes, we'll see. I mean, you know, all his age mates are like leaping him in like light years. They're doing their thing. They're going after the belts. They're doing whatever. So whatever he's going to do, we'll see. But I think also Golden Boy know they've got a damaged product on their hand where they've got time. They've got a bit of time left before it gets exposed, and then they can't make much more money off of him. So we'll see what happens with it. But yeah. And I think that wraps up for this week. Anything else anyone wants to add? No?
PBC to the ground, Matchroom, Queensbury and Top Rank. No, I'm joking, man. next week's going to be a big one. Join us. We might be doing a live stream, might be doing spaces. We don't know yet, but hey, listen, the prediction league's heating up. Prediction league's heating up. So I'm trying to win a prize because I'm hearing there's a prize for anyone who's doing it. So I'm trying to win that prize. I'm hearing there's a Samsung's putting down a Patek or a Rolex. So if you lot want to win that, you already know what you have to do, man. So get involved.
I'll tweet the other day. If you're looking in the future, yeah, get magnifying glass or whatever you need, the time machine, go to the future, get 12 months from there, you'll see that I was a kid, the winner.
If you haven't seen that, go on our Twitter, and there's a prediction league that we started yesterday. So only on week one, so you still got time to join and catch up.
Furman, F me up, man. I was taking home maximum points. Knew that I needed the UD to help that for me.
On the watch along, we were proper praying that it goes to UD, especially after the first three knockdowns. It's a bit scary, but yeah. So if you haven't joined, join now. It's a fun way to just get involved and put some predictions in, see what happens. And hey, if you win big, you know, there's prizes to be won. So yeah. So please give us like and subscribe, and we're on Spotify and Apple Music, Apple Podcasts or music. Apple Podcasts. That's it. Thank you. Give us 5 stars on that. And we'll see you in the next week.
Coming for you. Is it frustrating to train like you did and then have this in 7 or 8 seconds?
For this fight, I only trained probably 2 weeks or 3 weeks for this fight. I had to bury my best friend, and I dedicated this fight. I wasn't going to fight. I dedicated this fight to him. I was going to rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lynch is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm from Nairclaw. There's no one that can match me. My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable. And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.